powers combined, I am Captain Planet.
Captain Planet, he's a hero, gonna take pollution down to zero.
This is Gaia's Gang. It's a Captain Planet retrospective podcast. We're going to go back and watch episodes of the show. I'm Ariel Van Cleve, and I'm along with
Andrew McCardell
and
Emily Smith.
And we thought of this idea while we were out forest bathing in the, the Liddell Reserve on Bainbridge Island. I can't quite remember exactly the origins of our origin story. I think I was getting really excited about the words put asunder from the Captain Planet theme song.
Were we just randomly singing the theme song to Captain Planet?
That's a natural response, I think, to forest bathing. There was also discussion of Fern Gully, and I can't remember if that happened before or after we were talking about Captain Planet.
I think it was in the midst of, because I'm also very obsessed with Fern Gully.
I went back
because my mom kept referring to it as environmentalist propaganda. At the time, because it was all about saving the planet and being watchful of how you use the resources that are available.
So yeah, there was definitely, at some point, that transition to singing the Captain Planet theme song. And I think just like a general nostalgia for that period of time.
Which is very in right now. Just general nostalgia.
That's true. And neon.
Yeah.
Just fashion hot takes.
That's right.
I'll need to find some more tapered jeans.
But yeah, I think you're right. It was just a general conversation about nostalgia and then Captain Planet. And then it launched into maybe we should go back and watch some of these episodes, because I couldn't remember them specifically, but I remember that they were influential on me at the time.
Yeah. And so... I was thinking about this over the last couple of days. I was trying to remember the 90s cartoons that I loved the most. And the only one that I'm really sure about was the X-Men cartoon. Like, that was my favorite.
Right.
Like, I specifically know that I loved that and I always wanted to watch it. And I don't have that many memories of this show specifically.
Mm-hmm.
But, and we'll get into this, but I remember, like, flipping it on. It definitely has... It triggers that nostalgia. If you enjoyed those cartoons, it has that aesthetic, that animation style, the vocal stylings. It was just like being wrapped in a warm blanket, you know, lit by candlelight on like a cold winter's evening for a kid who was 7, 8 years old when this show came on. So it was, I was pleasantly surprised that it was pretty good and like a fun watch.
So many parallels between Hygge and Captain Planet cartoon watching for you.
Yeah. The other thing I remember, the only specific thing to the show, and then I'll be done.
There's more.
Is that I had like a little boy crush on Linka and Gi.
Right.
The wind and water users in the show. It was like, you know, as like an 8-year-old kid, I just really wanted them to be my babysitter, I think.
Right. You're just like, they seem really friendly.
Yeah.
And they're like looking out for me in some way.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it was like the friend aspect of the show that I think I enjoyed so much. The fact they were all working together, I was very into that when I was little. Just like group effort. So
yeah.
I was very into recycling. I, in fact, had a recycling club as a child.
Did
so
you really?
I really did.
Who were the members of
this
club?
It was just my sister and my cousin. Okay. So, I mean, it's we crushed
though.
Cans. I think probably my parents wanted us to do that so they could cash in the...
Did you have a can crusher in the garage?
We had a can crusher in the basement.
In the basement.
And so it just made sense to have a club. And anyways...
Yeah, just a quick question. Your sister and cousin, were they... volunteers as part of this club, or were they conscripted?
That is a fair question.
They likely were conscripted, I think. Yeah, it seems more my thing than theirs. But
the one thing we'll discover as we go along in this podcast is that Emily's a very passionate person. And just enjoys clubs, I'm assuming, more than the average bear.
Yes, that's true. I'm a joiner. I'm a leader. It's, you know. And so you can imagine an activist cartoon really spoke to me even in my childhood.
And I think this is a good time for you to explain just how difficult a child you were, speaking specifically about Lunchables.
Oh, this is true. I mean, this could have been Captain Planet's fault, but I refused to take Lunchables in my lunch because of the like plastic and whatnot. And I thought it was environmentally irresponsible. And so I wouldn't take them. And my poor parents were like, yes, but we can buy your lunch in a box. So I think I had to start making my own lunch promptly thereafter.
Wow.
Yeah. So it could have been Captain Planet.
So, and then by the way that Captain Planet was created was because of this report that came out in 1980 called the Global 2000 Report by, and it was commissioned by Carter. And it was basically just explaining, like, if you don't change a lot of things, we're going to be overpopulated. It's going to be a nightmare. There's going to be no resources available to anybody. And it freaked Ted Turner out, because the first thing that I noticed when I rewatched the first episode, which we are going to be talking about, was that it said story by Ted Turner, which was odd to me.
I missed that.
Like, always be noticing things. So like, so I saw this and I was like, but why on earth would Ted Turner care about creating an environmentalist cartoon for children? Turns out it's because of this report. It completely freaked him out. And it wasn't just this this cartoon that was created years after, but he also developed this news arm, this environmental news reporting arm inside CNN, and created an environmental department for TBS at the time, which was all done with Barbara Pyle, whom he had met in 1980. She has an environmental background and a public relations background. And then, as it turns out, he tasked her later with creating some sort of story for kids to get on this environmentalist train. So he asked Barbara Pyle to create some sort of superhero, and she said, well, what do I have to do? And he's like, I don't know, that's your problem. And then so she created
Captain Planet,
which is this like superhero that comes out of the earth. Right? That's basically where he comes from initially.
Yeah, he's Eco Superman.
Right. So he just is like, I don't know. He's got the green hair, and he's got sort of like a bluish, shiny body.
With a nice physique and good hair. Very good 90s hair.
And an outstanding voice. Like, I think one of the reasons why I've been so obsessed with Captain Planet for still now is the guy who voices that. I don't remember his name. But it's like perfect. And I think even then I was very just into deep male voices.
Ariel also works in radio, we should say. So this kind of makes sense.
Kind of.
I don't, but I will say that when I watched the episode for the third time this morning, I did think the same thing. Like, Captain Planet's voice is very positive. It's very soothing.
Yes.
It's like a little bit bro-y, but not in like a grating way. It's just like very like, let's do this team. I got your back.
There's a lot of he commands a lot of respect and attention, but it's also not too much. Like, it's not, it's like, it's just right. And I would love to like, I have so many questions about that, but that's like a totally other podcast about how did they choose Captain Planet's voice? And then that's just for me. I think I do on my own.
Well, yeah. And I meant to look at also, because since I thought that as well, like, who was this? And I didn't look and I don't remember. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because, and we'll get into this, but there are huge stars all around Captain Planet, whoever this actor is, who may turn out is someone quite extraordinary, and he does do an extraordinary job, but there are such huge names across the rest of the show. And this was a big surprise coming back to it, that I do wonder what that actor's story and path was.
Well, then why don't we start with the episode then and talk about these voices? Like, one of the first ones is LeVar Burton.
Yeah.
Like, he's the one that's narrating the first episode, just explaining, like, things are bad. We need a hero. Who's going to come in and save this place? Mm-hmm. Then we get into this whole thing with this massive drilling machine is walking through a forest.
Yes.
Which is nuts.
It is a walking oil rig.
It's a walking oil rig.
Which seems like we should have invented by now.
I know. I'm pretty sure that something similar was in Fern Gully, where it was going, walking through and ripping things up. So, like, there was this terror that we were going to have mobile drill rigs and things like that. I don't know, maybe they're somewhere, but I don't think so.
Something else I want to say, like at the start of the show, I was really amped for the theme song, and I had forgotten they play the theme song at the end credits. Right. They do not play it at the start of the show. And I spent, the first time I watched this episode, I spent most of the 22 minutes worrying I wasn't going to hear it. So I was thrilled when it does. It does come up at the end.
Oh, it comes up in the end in a big way. So we're seeing this drill rig walk through the forest, mm-hmm. Just crushing trees, nearly killing an adorable little rabbit.
Which they make it very hard to tell that the rabbit escapes.
Yes.
It's this adorable, pristine white bunny.
Oh, I was worried about that.
And I thought the first two times I watched it, and y'all told me differently when we talked about it, but mm-hmm. the first two times I watched it, I did not see that bunny escape. Mm-hmm. I thought the bunny was smashed to bits. But I did see a white blur.
Which that would have been too much.
That's dark.
If that's like, right? That's a lot at the very start of a new show.
I think they were chill with the audience thinking that the bunny was dead.
Well, probably, but at the same time, like, at least, like, sharp eyes, you're going to notice that bunny got away, thank goodness.
Mm-hmm.
So it walks further toward the water, and it puts this, what do they call it, a land blaster, this, like, drill into the water and start pumping oil out from the earth.
Mm-hmm.
The trouble is that as they're doing this, it cracks the ceiling of Gaia's home. And she wakes up from her nap. So she's awake, and she's like, oh no.
Who's Gaia?
So Gaia apparently is in charge of the Earth, but she's been sleeping?
Yeah, she refers to herself. I think she refers to herself, or somebody refers to her as the spirit of the Earth. And she also says when she wakes up from her nap, what's a mother to do? Is she starts
right.
to, so she's presenting mother herself Earth. as Mother Earth, I think. Which...
So Gaia is woken up by this land blaster that's kind of drilling into her home, and which I have questions about. But so that's happening. So she gets up from her nap and she like solves the cracks, and it's like, oh, okay, fine. Like waves her hand or something.
Yeah, and like mends the crystal ceiling of her sanctuary,
right.
Which... cracked, but didn't shatter under what I imagine is immense pressure.
Immense.
From
like
being
it's gotta
way
be.
Below the ocean.
Right. Right. So Okay. So she's way below the ocean. She's waking up from her nap. She's like, what's a mother to do? And then she goes to this like Synergy-esque screen. Those of you who watch Gem know what I'm talking about. And she's like looking at all this just pollution and destruction and everything's gone wrong. And apparently she had been sleeping for a century.
Yeah. And I think a lot of moms can relate to this issue of waking up from an accidental nap, sleeping a little too long, and everything's destroyed. It seems like this very thing has happened to Gaia.
Yeah, and thank goodness that this villain, Hoggish Greedley, and his mm-hmm. little... It's just two villains in this episode. Hoggish Greedley and his sidekick, whose name I missed, but his sidekick resembles... like Beavis from Beavis and Butthead in his like mid to late 40s, early 50s, maybe.
No teeth. Where are all his...
No, he has
no,
butt
he has,
teeth.
He has like little rat teeth.
Yeah.
But they're kind of on the sides.
Oh, he has a mouthful of very vermin-y teeth.
I thought they were meth teeth, which was also a problem in the 90s. It's still a
this
problem.
The show
was
tackling a lot of issues.
A lot of issues.
You've got a lot to do.
So because of the fact that her home is being disrupted, now she's awake, now she's seeing all this mayhem that earthlings have caused, okay, so now she has to do some sort of action plan. Part of the action plan is that she happens to have 5 rings available.
I did notice they just floated
they
to
were
her
just
on
there.
A bed of a giant diamond, and it was
so
like, was this
waiting.
Always the plan?
Right, like she's just been waiting for us to like really yeah. fuck things up, and then she's like, well, thank God I made these rings.
I think that's right, because she says something like, now it's time for the rings, and like I need my first planeteers.
Right.
So, like, from the dawn of time...
She's just been laying in
Gaia was, like, primordial ooze, early life, right. Dinosaurs. Okay, now we need the... Industrial Revolution, now we need the Planeteers.
Right. And they have these... There are 5... There's the 5 rings. She's going to send them to 5 youths across across the world, mm-hmm. and we have Kwame from Africa, and when we meet him, he's planting trees, mm-hmm. a lot of trees.
Yeah.
Then there's Guy from Asia. We meet her. She's swimming with dolphins. Mm-hmm. And Emily, you noted that dolphins were like
The thing. I mean, anyone with a Lisa Frank notebook knows that dolphins were very hot in the 90s, but also just like a symbol of something you wanted to save, right?
Yes.
Were dolphins, in fact, the ones getting their noses caught in the six-pack soda ring?
Oh, yeah.
Well, we see a bird caught in one.
That's
in,
a little. Yeah,
is it in the title sequence or is it later?
I think it's later.
When Gaia is looking at the devastation on Earth.
Oh,
maybe.
That's right.
When she sees it.
But dolphins, I think, too, were having mm-hmm. like other. There was a lot, just a lot of like very obvious coverage of like these animals are in danger because of the fact that we're monsters.
Yes. I think we call them charismatic fauna. Is that the...
exactly? Yeah. So they're an animal that humans can kind of relate to, right? Because uh-huh. they're very smart and they're sweet, and you know, you can swim with them at SeaWorld, and so
right.
they're kind of an obvious face for the environmental movement of the 90s,
which is why Guy is then swimming with them and being best friends with all these dolphins, and then she gets her ring.
And the delivery mechanism for each of the rings I think is sort of fun and amusing.
That's
like,
right.
So Kwame is like sort of, as he's planting his trees, he has like a staff that he's mm-hmm. using to like poke the holes for the seedlings or for the small plants. And he just like stabs his staff into the ground and the ring is attached to it. And then a dolphin actually gives Guy her ring. And both of those are pretty cool. My favorite's coming up in a second.
And then Wheeler, we have from North America, just a good old Brooklyn boy.
Mm-hmm.
We meet him when there's like some tough guy in an alley who's given a hard time to this other guy. And he just shows up and kicks a chain out of the tough guy's hand. Mm-hmm. And then just shows him his fist as though that's enough to like get like, and this guy seems legitimately like he could murder someone.
He reacts like Batman is behind Wheeler and that's what he's actually afraid of. But no.
And this
it's just a ginger from Brooklyn.
But this spoke to me because violent New York City, like I'm from rural America. Like, yes, of course, this is what big cities look like.
Mm-hmm. Also, so they're like in a back alley in Brooklyn somewhere.
Right.
And, you know, there's this mugging in progress and the guy flees and there's a trash can fire.
Yeah.
A trash can fire next to Wheeler, and that's how he gets his ring.
Right.
Of course, he has the power of fire.
Of fire.
I do believe Merriam-Webster just added dumpster fire to the dictionary. So that's a then and now important note.
Shout out to Merriam-Webster.
Then there's Linka from the Soviet Union. And we meet her when she's, what is she, like playing a keyboard with birds around her?
So I was floored by this again this morning. It looks like she's in a very pastoral setting.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like she's, because it's like attached to, like it's over her shoulders, around her neck, and it looks like she's drawing. I thought she was drawing, like painting or something at first.
Right.
But no, it's like a keytar.
Right. And I don't, how? But whatever.
Why is my question. Why is this the symbolic bit?
Right. Like that's
the Soviet. Is she in Kyrgyzstan? Is she in Uzbekistan? I don't.
Are you listing stands right now?
I'm listing places hoping that they were in fact part of the Soviet Union.
fact check. But I what I don't understand also is why are there birds that are so enamored by her keytar playing that like this is, I don't know. But the bird appears with her ring, correct?
Yes.
Right. One of the many.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so she's obviously a good person. So it's like it was like a Cinderella thing or something. That's kind of what I was envisioning. It's just like being surrounded by animals.
A patron of the arts, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And then finally, Mati from South America.
Mm-hmm.
And we meet him when he is saving a monkey from a leopard?
Yeah.
But like
a monkey's like caught in vines as though it was like tied up to a tree.
Yeah, this monkey got all caught in some vines and then Mati shows up.
Which seems like something a monkey should be able to avoid on its own.
Then like figure out how to get yourself out. Mm-hmm. And then this leopard's like just kind of walking toward it and wants to chomp chomp eat it. And then Mati shows up and it's like, oh shit, okay, then I won't bother because this very tiny young man mm-hmm. appeared and terrified
me. Strong Mowgli vibes from Matee.
Very strong.
Yeah.
Jungle Book.
Yeah.
Okay. So then there you go. So these are this is the cast of characters. These are the folks that are going to be known as the Planeteers a little bit later, but they all of a sudden just arrive on Hope Island, mm-hmm. which is where Gaia lives. Is this underground?
Is it a traditional because island she has above a home, the water?
She lives apparently under the ocean floor in the core of the earth, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. Yet now she has a Hope Island?
Right.
Is it like I have a condo in this place and a thing?
Oh, right.
Yeah, and we'll find out pretty quickly that she can't leave Hope Island.
She's not allowed to go.
So, right, where did she come from? Because where they end up meeting her seems to me to be pretty clearly above ground. Like, they're inside somewhere, but, like, water comes in from the shore.
Right, but they're on an island above ground. Yeah. Like, what is happening?
Maybe here's maybe what it is. Perhaps Gaia has an immense, like, Byzantine network of, like, crystal tunnels under the earth.
Excuse me?
And, like, the epicenter is Hope Island, and the only place she can manifest above the surface is
that
Hope
spot.
Island. Mm-hmm. But when she was napping and Hoggish Greedley, our villain, mm-hmm. is drilling, she was, like, down a hallway.
That's
this is
pretty
way
convenient.
More thought that needs to be put into this.
That's pretty convenient.
I, first of all, just stopped listening at some little point of that story. And also, just so much detail for the potential backstory here. We'll have to link up with Barbara Pyle and see if that was, in fact, what she was thinking when she created
Byzantine tunnels.
I think she would say
I heard crystals involved. Yeah. I heard the word crystal.
Because there's like a lot of shimmering that goes on. So like it has to be a fortress of some kind.
Yeah, I think that's sort of like a very 90s era kind of like, here's how we show like something that's like either the future mm-hmm. or like superpowers are not quite mm-hmm. right. Like Superman had his crystals, mm-hmm. you know, his like fortress of solitude with the crystals from Krypton. And this was like Gaia can mend it magically with a wave of her hand. And it right. looks sort of like something natural, but more
right.
than what we're used to.
Right. And so we're expected to believe that they all just were transported to Hope Island.
Oh, yeah.
Somehow magically.
And
it
speaking
seems.
Of LeVar Burton, this very much looked like, you know, he was in Star Trek The Next Generation. This really looked like the transporter with like more colors, and they all just show up on Hope Island.
Right. Like there they are meeting Gaia. Mm-hmm. And Gaia's like, hey, guys, I need your help. And you're going to give it to me because you're our best chance at saving the planet. And Linka says my favorite thing where, what is it? She was like, listen, that's cool and all, but we are but youths, which is like the perfect way to explain like, how can kids make a difference? Which is exactly what a children's environmental activist show mm-hmm. needs to say. Like, come on, I'm just a kid. I can't possibly make any difference. And she's like, as a matter of fact, you can. With these rings. Mm-hmm. And then they start explaining how the rings work, sort of, not really.
Sort of.
They're just like, each of you has an element. So there you go. And then when Linka tries hers out, she automatically knows just to say wind.
Yes.
And then
and
some
nearly
wind
kills them all with a tornado.
Right, and then a wind storm kicks up and she has this tornado around her and they all freak out. But yet, like, not really. Wheeler is the only one who seems suspect through all of this.
Yes, he's the only one who has any questions at all, I think.
And they're giving him a hard time mm-hmm. by the fact that he's, like, asking any questions and, like, confused, which is off-putting.
Yeah. So he's, like, simultaneously the only one who's inquisitive about this craziness that's happening to them. And he's also just kind of a jerk grosso.
Right.
Linka literally has to shove him and tell him to leave her alone because he's so into her accent right away.
Classic.
But yeah, the rest of them are just like, okay, like we'll try out our powers now.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So then they each individually try out their powers. So Guy is water. And then, the next one was Wheeler, right? Because he did the fire
yes.
and then caused a fire and everyone freaked out. Mm-hmm. And then Guy saved it with her water power.
Right. And then he gives
and then
her,
Wheeler complained.
He gives her shit. Yeah, he gives her shit for rescuing them all from the inferno that he almost started.
And then he's like, oh, you're right.
Oh, and then the only one who seems to be, that's not true, both Mati and Kwame are like masterful with their powers out of the gate. Kwame's just like, like he is Earth and he just raises like a small mountain.
Yeah.
And then like immediately like repairs it and is like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
And then Mati is just like, I already know what my power is and we need to get into this.
I do have questions about this because the power is heart, I believe.
Yes.
Is that what it is?
And he knows it.
And he knows it. He intuits it. And everyone else has an element of the earth.
Right.
I'm familiar from sixth grade science with the elements of the earth, but I don't remember heart being one of them.
Well, not only is this heart thing not really an element, it's also like mind control of some kind. Because they all say, I can feel him and hear him in my head. They can feel and hear this dude. Like, why aren't they more concerned about that? Like, that's a weird thing that's happening.
Yes. And he intuits that he already know what my power is. It's the power of heart. I can hear your thoughts and I can sense you. So yeah, he is like the Professor Charles Xavier of the Planeteers.
I don't get that reference.
He's Professor X from the X-Men.
Mm.
Nope.
Didn't see it.
This is going to happen a lot.
missed that one.
But Gaia also characterizes his power as the most important, that the others would not mean anything or do anything without his. And it's interesting because he's smaller in stature, in physical stature, than the others. He seems to be younger, although it's not crystal clear how old any of them.
The age range is confusing.
Yeah. But yeah, so powers. So they have these powers and they seem to be, I think it's at this point, and not to steal your thunder, but I think that they say like, oh, Kwame, despite the fact that he has like mastered his power, like already says, we need to go practice with our powers.
And Gaia,
totally reasonable,
is like, nope, no time for that, y'all. You got to go save some stuff. There's a problem. So, like, this is very irresponsible for Mother Earth to, like, give these teens some sort of element that they can control and then not let them practice on it. Seeing, obviously, that Wheeler has a problem with his power, he just keeps lighting things on fire.
But she has faith in the youth.
That's right.
And that's an important point of the show.
Yeah. Have we said who voices Gaia yet? Did we mention this?
We didn't. Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah.
Whoopi Goldberg is the voice of Gaia, which, why?
Well, this is a good, like, I suppose we should, like, check on.
I suspect she's an environmentalist.
Yeah. She must be, right?
Sympathetic.
Must have been
to the
sympathetic.
Cause.
She must have been in, like, she was, my first memory, and I know this is, like, not the first time that she was, like, big, but, you know, like, as a kid, I remember, like, the Sister Act movies were, like, huge hits. I don't remember if this was around the same time, 1990, that those would have been out.
Yeah.
Something else, maybe. But she was, like, this is a pretty important role, and I mean, in 2018, I was very soothed to hear her voice.
Well, and just the fact that, like, Whoopi Goldberg was a name, and this is a kids' television show, and not and Hoggish Greedley, the voice of that one is Ed Asner, who is also a legit actor. So, just the fact that that's happening is interesting, though. Maybe it's because of the fact that it was a Ted Turner joint and they all just wanted to like jump on because they were all freaked out the same way that he was. I don't know, but I think looking into, like, because as we go along, there are also several other, in the second episode in particular, it's just flooded with these names of famous actors and their voices are so, like,
lots of star power.
It's just, it's incredible to me that this show had the weight that it did right out of the gate.
Yes.
So Gaia, voiced by Whoopi Goldberg, won't let them practice their powers. She tells them, no, unnecessary. You got to go battle this dude.
So, yeah, like, thus concludes the most efficient origin story.
That's right.
And, like, the history of, like, fiction.
And still, Wheeler has questions, but still, Wheeler's getting shit on for asking any questions at all. Like, still getting a hard time.
Just shut up and do it.
So, as that's happening, they get in this plane and they're heading toward this danger that they don't know what it looks like, what it's going to mean, how everything's going to shake out, but they're just going because Gaia told them to, and they have these powers. So as they're heading that way, they get zapped by, like, they're spotted by Hoggish Greedley, and they get zapped by oil. Like, he just sprays the plane down, and it starts to, like, or no, it, even before that, there is this conversation about like, what do we do if it's too much, or what do we do? We need to make sure that Gaia's with us or something. And then all of a sudden Gaia just appears in the sky.
I think that's Mati, right? Yeah, so like part of his heart
like,
power.
Is he like having them, is he giving them visions?
So I sort of dug this because like, so she can't physically leave Hope Island, he right. says, but she's always with us. And he like says, uses his heart power
right.
and Gaia manifests as like a projection in the sky.
Right.
Like her, like, neck up, like, takes up the entire sky.
Yeah.
And then she, like, reassures them. Is that when she says, if this becomes too much, you can just combine
just,
your powers?
Just combine your powers.
With no further explanation.
Doesn't explain what that
foreshadow.
Means. Right. Just like, hey, if you guys get to be in a little too much hot water, don't worry. Just combine your powers. It'll be fine. That's it.
Meanwhile, we get a little insight to how old these folks are while they're on the plane, because I can't. Somebody's complaining about
Wheeler.
Wheeler, it's always
still
Wheeler.
Being
always
a dick and a baby.
Yes. Wheeler is complaining about not being able to fly the plane.
Right.
But then we're informed he doesn't even have a driver's license.
Yeah, Gia is like, "Well, do you have a driver's license? Because she's the one piloting."
Which apparently, all it takes for you to be able to pilot a plane is to just to have a driver's license. Though to be fair, he is from Brooklyn, and I have friends
True.
Who Not, like yeah. have never needed their driver's license just because they can get around otherwise. So mm-hmm. we're suspect still about mm. the ages. I'm still mm-hmm. suspect. I couldn't tell you.
Gee, by contrast, vast experience piloting space age.
Right.
90s.
I mean,
swims with dolphins one day, yeah. next day just piloting
yeah. Yeah.
this plane. And is able to safely land it even after it was zapped with all of this oil.
Mm-hmm.
All the gears and controls are out. Linka has to figure out a way to keep the plane up with her use of the wind power that mm-hmm. she has. But it's draining her. She can't be relied on alone to do it, which, okay. And then as they're trying to figure, then all of a sudden there's Earth that gets involved, and Kwame creates this little landing.
Yeah, like a little plateau.
Spot. Yeah. In the middle of the water. So they land, they're fine, and then they have a little back and forth with Horace Greeley. And it's yeah. Wheeler who's on like the loudspeaker.
Oh, yeah. So I thought this was weird too. So the way they get shot down is they do get like fire hosed with crude oil, which A,
yeah.
seems wasteful on
yeah.
Greedley's part. But B, he shoots them with the oil. It's not really clear how far away they are, because they do like a very 90s
right.
zoom in on the hose, oil comes out, and all of a sudden the ship has been hit with oil.
Mm-hmm.
But they like fly for a while, and Link is supporting them with a tornado, and then when they land, they are very far from the oil rig.
Yes.
So it's a hell of a hose, is really
that's
what I'm driving at. And really good aim with your random
sure
robot
Greedley
rig
would
arm.
Love, would love you to say that. It's a hell of a hose. I digress. Yeah, I mean, I think that what's interesting about this whole thing is that I don't quite, like, why are they so calm? It's amazing to me that they're mm-hmm. as calm as they are. I mean, is that part of why they were chosen? Probably, that they can be calm under pressure, because, I mean, Wheeler obviously has no problem standing up to bullies after we met him through mm-hmm. the back alley kicking the chain out of
right.
a bad guy's hand.
But by contrast, and I don't want to, you know, this might be a bit of a hot take. I don't want to be too aggressive. They're also kind of quitters. So, like, they land on the plateau. They get shot with the oil. They land on the plateau. And Wheeler talks a bunch of shit to Hoggish Greedley, who's threatening. He's like, if you try to shoot us with any more oil, I'll burn it all out of the sky or whatever with my
right.
fire. Which, like, bold claim. You don't really know the extent of your powers yet, but okay.
right.
But then they, like, have a little, like, conversation, like, team meeting.
Mm-hmm.
In which they decide almost immediately that this is all too much for them. Because
right.
Hoggish decides, he's like, I'm going to hold hostage the wildlife. He's like, I won't shoot at you. You're just going to burn it out of the sky. I'll just take your word, I guess. But I will turn this hose on the poor seals and walruses
mm-hmm.
and birds on the coastline. And they're like, oh, no. Well, shoot, this is a bit of a standoff. Nothing to be done for. We better just combine our powers and see what happens. Quitters! No innovation with their powers. That
they
have.
Haven't had a chance to practice yet.
There's been no training. Like, they're just given these things. I mean, I understand your point. I think it's fair, but at the same time, like, they're but babies when it comes to what are they capable of.
Mm-hmm. Also, they understand they're better together.
Mm.
Wow. I mean, I'm persuaded.
They're better together. So yes, they do combine their powers, and each of them says them as they slam their, again, how did they know to do it? They just knew. They could intuit all of this. Or maybe it's like Mati who's telling them how to do all these things with his mind control. So they combine their powers, and what comes from this? A being.
All right. This from is when the we Earth. Meet.
We meet
Captain Planet.
Captain Planet himself. He just rises out of the Earth and flies around, and then he meets up with them, and they're all like, hey, bro, basically.
Right. Yeah, it's like immediately, like, go planet. They're cheering him on. Mm-hmm. There is no holy shit.
Right, just like, go planet. It's like, dude, where did that guy even come from?
Yes.
You were just like hanging out with like birds and dolphins and stuff yesterday, and now you're like just watching a thing be created from the Earth and talk to you?
Mm-hmm.
Where did it come from? Why aren't you concerned? Why is there no worry on your face? So everyone's very chill. And he tells the kids, listen, I'm going to go handle all this stuff. You don't have any powers anymore because I'm here. Mm-hmm. So go just like clean up
That's
the
a good
animals.
Point. They lose their powers.
They lose their powers.
When the mm-hmm. captain is around.
That's right. So because the captain's around, they have to go and clean up all the animals and like pick up stuff and deal with oil things. So like the grunt work, well, he does all the cool stuff.
Yep.
Turns out he's like hella strong though. So,
like, I did not remember this.
I didn't remember him being like a superhero
yeah.
like this. Like, I always kind of thought of him as just like a man who had good things to say and would like take care of mm-hmm. problems.
Yeah.
But this is like legit superhero shit.
Yeah. He's like on a level with Superman.
Yeah.
It seems.
Right.
With his ease of bending, tying metal in knots.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the way that they show you almost immediately that he is physically invulnerable, absent, his main like vulnerability, which we'll get to in a second, but the way that they show you that he's physically basically indestructible is that the oil rig grabs him in one of its claw hands
mm-hmm.
and then has like a sort of like jackhammering wrist blade on the other mm-hmm. hand, and they stab him in the chest
like a
repeatedly
lot.
And
a
he
lot.
Just laughs it
he
off.
He laughs like the Pillsbury Doughboy.
He says that it tickles.
Yes.
Like it tickles him. Goodness gracious. Like,
I was kind of horrified when it started. Like, wait, what's going to happen here? Like, I know he's going to be okay, but are we going to see him impaled and then laugh it off? I feel like that would have been traumatic.
Which is why they didn't do it. And instead, they were just like, oh, it turns out he can handle anything, mm-hmm. including just a knife at his chest. So he gets drilled, laughs it off, goes and like rips open another like metal thing. Pulls out the Beavis-looking dude, and he's like, well, your time's over now. And he's like, oh, shit, basically.
Mm-hmm. What happens to that guy?
I think
we don't
like,
know.
He just throws him somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point. I don't
Tosses
really remember.
Didn't he wind up in, like, the trash?
Oh, yes. I think that's right. Because he, yes.
Because there was also the part when Captain Planet first was, like, emerging from the Earth, and then he went down to the bottom of the ocean and pulled the drill rig out, and then there was like a little piece of metal that was left, and he was like, we mustn't litter.
Don't litter.
Like, even went back and grabbed that and then threw it in the garbage that was conveniently located. And then
garbage and recycling.
In the wildlife refuge.
There were two pieces, which
yes.
was nice.
That was nice. Mm-hmm. It's good to make sure that we're all taken care of.
Yes.
So the one of the baddies winds up getting thrown in the trash because he's a trash person.
But Beavis had a few sort of quasi-redemptive moments where I can't remember exactly what he said, but he sort of tried to challenge Hoggish a little bit. Like,
I think
he saw this oil
of, like,
spilling. He saw the oil spilling out, and he was like, oh, like, this is gonna ruin, you know, like, the wildlife or whatever. And Hoggish is like, the only thing that matters in this world is me. And
that's
that was
true.
Just kind of the
is
end
an
of
important
it.
Motif
he was conflicted the
throughout
little guy.
The greed versus goodwill,
right?
Which we see a lot of, this kind of heart morality bit versus, yeah, capitalism, unregulated money making, and so these are kind of set up as foes throughout.
That's good. I like that.
Yeah,
yeah, just a little quick thought between the plot lines here. So back to the important turning point of the cartoon.
Right.
Mm. Oh, when we see Captain Planet's kryptonite?
We do.
Well, right, because he gets into the main area of this mobile drill rig, and he's talking to Hoggish Greedley, and he's like, you gotta knock this shit off, man. It's not cool. And he's like, don't you fucking tell me what to do. And he winds up spraying him with toxic waste, which he just has another hose of toxic waste just at the ready.
Right. So, A, like, why does he have that ready? Why would he need that in order to, like, drill? Like, in case an eco superhero emerges whose sole weakness is toxic waste, I better have this. But the second thing I noticed watching this morning is that he has what appears to be almost not like a full, like, Ghostbusters pack on his back, but like a couple of pipes or something. He's got like a backpack kit of toxic waste.
Because he's a baddie. He's a bad guy. He's a villain. So I guess that's his thing.
And this is like a very 90s thing too, right? This sort of amorphous, like, catch-all bad thing, toxic waste, right?
Right.
And it's similar to like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles ooze, you know, the things like that. That was also something that I was like, oh yes, I remember when when this was a thing.
When toxic waste was just a problem, like, and sludge. Just that. So he gets sprayed down, and then all of a sudden his powers are zapped, because turns out the thing on his chest is like the main source of energy, and he pulls that energy from the sun.
Also like Superman.
Right. So here we are.
Emily didn't know that was...
No, I'm laughing because initially when Andrew said, like, he's like Superman, you might think that he was referring just to a general superhero. But no, in fact, he has mapped specific powers and weaknesses to between Captain Planet and Superman. And that is why he has selected that.
Yeah, and I'm not suggesting this is like IP theft on the part of Barbara Pyle and Ted Turner. But I think that there are a lot, there are enough parallels here. To be drawn that.
That's good of you to.
Yeah, I'm not trying to cast aspersions. I'm just noting parallels.
So as he's laying there, just sort of like, uh-oh, don't have any powers at all. The kids gather around and they're freaked out because they don't know anything about this guy. What to do if this happens? What's next? Then they kind of realize, like, because of an accidental just light swiping across and wiping part of the toxic sludge off.
Yeah, the sun logo on his chest is partly revealed. So Kwame tries to, like, lift him. Nobody else does anything.
Yeah, they're just like, oh no.
And Kwame, again, thus far proving himself to be the
most valuable.
Him and Gee may be the most, like, competent so
far.
The
brains of the operation.
Yeah, and so he's trying to lift Captain Planet, maybe, like, just to do something. And
right.
Captain Planet is notably far too heavy for him to lift, but in the process, he, like, accidentally wipes off some of the sludge, revealing the sun logo, which starts to absorb the sunlight, and they notice, hey, we need to
just clean this off.
Yes.
But instead of just, like, cleaning it off more, they're like, well, okay, well, we can't use our powers just to bring the ocean to us, so we have to go to the ocean and get, like, a jacket full of water. Mm-hmm.
It is impressive that the jacket held water.
I know.
That I was like, we need that jacket for Seattle life.
They had to get creative about something. Yeah. So that they went and they're just
They were just being resourceful.
So they scooped up all this water and they made it back just in time before, like, the stomping mechanism of the drill rig was going to destroy Captain Planet.
Yeah, which the gentleman, so I think Gee and Linka go and get the water, right?
Yes.
And then the guys roll a boulder over next to Captain Planet to, like, stop the giant foot, the
which
oil rig
somehow
foot.
Stops the giant foot, just this boulder.
That three young men are physically strong enough.
Yeah, so, like, so that's fine. That's all well and good. Let them happen. It is a cartoon. So they dump water on the Captain Planet, and all of the toxic sludge goes away, and all of his powers come back, and he, like, zips away from the stomping thing before it actually stomps him. So then he goes back into action, and he, like, is more energized than ever before, it looks like. He's just, like, fucking jacked up and ready to tear something apart. But so he winds up just, like, punching the shit out of the drill rig.
Yep.
And then it's destroyed.
Yep.
But Hoggish Greedley is still able to get away.
Yes.
And, like,
he escapes into a pipe conveniently.
Right. And then as he's doing so, he's like, you haven't seen the last of me, basically.
So Ed Asner will be back.
Yeah, which is fine. No one's mad about that. As far as Ed Asner is concerned, Hoggish Greedley is a very bad man.
He is. I also wanted, I noted that, so I feel like a lot of the time you see superheroes, when they sort of recover from like a crisis and they physically sort of get themselves back up. Like it's usually like rage fueled. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking about like if anyone has watched Dragon Ball Z, mm-hmm. the way that they power up is often just a lot of screaming and anger and like rage. Captain Planet is only ever beaming with happiness
right.
when he is not incapacitated. He's right. just grinning, happy, like, thanks guys, off I go.
And there's like sparkles around him yeah. as soon as he's able to like have that power back.
Very positive.
All positive show. Yes. Yes. So after this, after the kids are then like, they help, they got the help from Captain Planet. Now they're saying, okay, well, what do we do now? There are all these animals that are covered in oil. And Captain Planet also like cleans everything up.
But not everything.
But not the animals. Not like the animals. He gets the mm-hmm. sheen out of the water, but he can't clean up the animals. But I think yeah. maybe is that because he wants to make sure the kids know responsibility? Is that part of it?
Yeah, I think so.
Also, one of the biggest human interest stories of the Exxon Valdez oil spill mm-hmm. was around cleaning up the animals after the oil spill.
Right.
So this featured heavily Dawn dish soap. You probably remember. In fact, that was the first thing I thought of when they were scrubbing the animals. Mm-hmm. I'm like, it's Dawn. It's a little blue. It must be Dawn.
It's yeah. the only soap that can like really get that oil.
Yes, apparently off of I looked into animals. This. It is officially recommended by like the World Bird Wildlife Clean
it's
up.
Officially
I'm
recommended.
I'm the making, WBWC
I'm now
question mark.
Making up an organization. But the organization that is responsible for cleaning birds after oil spills, which does exist, unfortunately, because oil spills are a thing that still happen today. Dawn is recommended, and I found old clips of people essentially saying like, sorry, but Dawn's the best. And other cleaning products have basically said that it's a conspiracy / bullshit that Dawn is getting all of this credit. And so you have like environmentally friendly products like the seventh generation products who mm-hmm. are publicly made statements like we've shipped free soap down to the oil spills and so far it's unclear if they've been used. And it was actually a little controversial in 2010 because, you know, one of the key ingredients in Dawn is petroleum.
Mm. We allegedly, right? Is that something we know for a fact? Because they're secretive about the recipe, right?
We know that less than 1/7 of the total volume of the product is from petroleum.
Fight fire with fire.
Basically, that's what a spokesperson said in 2010.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyways, a bit controversial, but I mean, Dawn is good. And
use what works.
Yeah. And fast fact, if you combine it with vinegar to clean your shower,
wow.
you'll be
okay.
really impressed. I mean, now
you're welcome,
everyone. Now I'm recommending Dawn and
parts.
I have mixed feelings about it. But at
yeah,
any rate,
here you are.
They cleaned the birds off, guys. And yes. the walruses.
Yeah. They were cleaning everything off and they had to do it by hand because they couldn't just like, they want to like soak the animals again with like the water from the ocean because then the oil get back into the ocean. And
that's true. Mm-hmm. And that's another pro of Dawn really is sensible. It doesn't harm the animal's skin or eyes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But well, we don't have any sponsors yet, but
but I do notice at the end that somehow the wind powers get the rest of the oil off. It's like they're scrubbing and then their powers are coming back and one of the last animals is cleaned off by wind. I'm like,
oh,
how
I
did
missed
that happen?
That.
But anyways, they speeded the process
yeah.
up.
Yeah. Well, we also need to talk about the fact that Wheeler, you know, because he's not going to let the episode end without being an asshole one more time, is bitching about why they have to do the cleanup. Nobody else has any problem with this. They're just going along as they've gone along with their superpowers and various other, like,
right.
elements of the show. But Wheeler bitches about it. And Ariel, what... So Linka says what is easily my favorite line of the episode. I missed it the first few times I watched it, and I laughed like a lunatic when I heard it this morning. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but do you remember? So Linka basically is like, knock it off, and she calls him something very
specific. She calls him an imperialistic dog. An imperialistic dog. This woman from the Soviet Union is talking to this kid from Brooklyn and says, you imperialistic dog. Like,
but she says it
just
sort of affectionately.
Does
like,
she?
Oh, Wheeler.
I don't know.
I don't know. I just like this, you know, intersectional environmentalism that's introduced here. We're thinking about gender. We're thinking about colonialism. We're thinking about race. I love it.
There's a lot that happens. And I mean, I think it is worth noting, too, that because of the fact they're all from different backgrounds, that this is one of the most diverse things that maybe we had been seeing mm-hmm. on the yes. air as kids. That was like on constantly on our TV screen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's worth noting. I just find it fascinating and odd that Linka calls him an imperialistic dog. And I'm
and
not
she says
sure
something even
if
more,
it's affectionate or not.
I thought
I
her
can't
tone
get a read on her.
Seemed a little bit. I thought maybe she even
like
said sweet imperialistic. Like, I don't know.
I don't remember it the seemed, sweet part. I just remember the imperialistic.
I got this sort of like gentle, affectionate admonishment tone from it. But then she goes on to like specifically say there are some things more important than
yes.
money.
Yeah. Some right. rewards are greater than money.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is, again pulls at this idea, like, and then it quickly we have this call to action. So it's this
yes.
idea that there's this more moral imperative to take care of the environment mm-hmm. and you can feel good about it. It's not about money,
right?
But it's about doing something good for the environment.
And it does segue immediately into the PSA, which happens so far at every episode, right?
Yeah,
at the
this
end,
is cool, and I've forgotten about this too.
Where they say, you know, if you want to help save the planet, here's what you can do easily at home. Maybe don't take your car so much. Maybe don't keep your lights on constantly. Carpool if you want to hang out with a buddy and spend less time in your car burning yeah. oil and gas. It is that call to action, but it's this call to action that is simplistic and not overwhelming in any way. They're not asking you to go out and clean animals after an oil spill. They're not asking you to like go out and clean up toxic waste or something like that. It's just maybe take your car a little bit
yeah.
less, which
individual
of course,
action focused.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. you're going to have a little kid who's going to walk up to their parent and be like, yep. you know what, maybe we should take the car a little bit less. Maybe we should think about carpooling, or, you know, do we need to have this light on? Because that's a thing that I started doing almost immediately,
oh,
and
yes.
I still mm-hmm. do that.
Yes, I was very obsessed with turning off all of the lights.
Oh, and we mentioned earlier the six-pack rings, the plastic rings, mm-hmm. and I, to this day, will snip them.
Right.
Protecting the birds.
Dolphins.
The dolphins, the birds.
Any animal at all that could get tangled up inside of a six-pack ring.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It could just be a parade of horribles if they're left intact.
Yeah, so I think going back and watching this and realizing just how potentially influential this was on small children, I didn't... It just surprised me. It surprised me that I still do some of these things and that, like, it made as much of an impact as a cartoon should or could.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's right. Mm-hmm. There are sort of, like, very, like, resonant still, like, habits and instincts and things that we have. Yeah, and this issue, especially, like, you know, Emily mentioned earlier, I think the Gulf spill and, you know, Deepwater Horizon, you know, in 2010, you know, this is one that's still, I don't know that all of the environmental concerns that were salient in 1990 as we go through the show are going to be as powerful still.
Mm-hmm.
This was one that was like, wow. And in fact, you know, this oil rig, this wasn't like a, you know, a tanker ship or something that wrecked. This was a moving oil rig that, you know, I remember seeing like news stories and simulations and videos of like the spill erupting from the floor of the Gulf in 2010. And like, this looks like that. This is a spill
right.
that emanates from after the rig moves away, flees Captain Planet. The spill like really looked like that. It was kind of an interesting moment.
It was a little bit of a downer moment because
yeah.
I was like, this is a major issue that we were really worried about in
mm-hmm.
the 90s. And
mm-hmm.
here we are 2010, two decades later with, in, you know, a similar giant problem. And so I don't know the answer to this, but just reflecting, like, what did we do at the larger legislative level after the Exxon Valdez, and then not much, as you pointed out,
mm-hmm.
and kind of the same issue today. So we're 7 years post Deepwater Horizon, and what's different? I'm not sure much is different. So for me, it was a little bit of a a downer political moment.
Well, and there were some changes that were made to, like, the tanker ships that would carry oil. They have, like, double hulls now instead of just the single. But, like, that's for the tanker, not necessarily because of an oil derrick out in the middle of the ocean. Mm-hmm. So, but that's sort of a human thing of there's a problem, now we have to solve it. Thinking about the problem ahead of time is much more of a challenge and figuring out a way to plan ahead. But that's sort of, I think, the mission almost of the Captain Planet situation is to say we have to be thinking about these things on a global scale and the grandest of schemes possible, because anything could happen. We can't just wait for the bad stuff to go on.
I feel like to this episode, we're still 28 years later trying to take pollution down to zero.
That's a good point.
But we did. It is nice to get to the end of the episode, though, because at the very end, you do get that iconic theme song.
That's right.
And I feel like.
Anywhere I thought you were going to invite me to sing the theme song, is what I thought was going to happen. Just
very
then.
Into that.
All right, so that pretty much wraps up the first little hot take of ours for Captain Planet. We're rewatching all of these episodes, and the next episode focuses on acid rain, and there's a lot of verminy rat-looking people in it. So that should be fun. We'll talk about that, and we'll figure out some way if it is still reflective of what's happening today. And if not, we solved it. Thanks, Captain.
Looking forward to good environmental news on the next pod. Mm-hmm.
That's right. All right. So that'll just about wrap it up. And thanks for listening.
Captain Planet, he's our hero.